Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Here we go.
Jake and Josh are here
to analyze the game they love
for the team they love.
This is another Dolphins podcast.
Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh Outs.
2025 NFL draft is in the books, and I have two tape dogs with me to bring it all together. One final look, close the book on the 2025 NFL draft. Kat and Houts are both joining me today. Gentlemen, before we get into the Dolphins specifically, can I get some just overall reactions to draft weekend here? Very unusual weekend. And I think a lot of it starts with only one quarterback going inside the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, I got to say, of all these drafts, all 32 teams, there weren't a lot that I don't know if there are any that I really disliked or even really liked. That I think all of them were, there are usually three.
You're
or four.
Maturing.
There are three or four that I can usually point to and say, man, I really like that pick. Or I really like that draft in general. And there are some I was like, oh, I just don't get it. And this year, it just seemed like everyone was kind of in the middle. Obviously, the Shedeur Sanders talk dominated everything. But yeah, it was a fascinating weekend.
Yeah, I don't know that too many really stand out. I think every year at this time, I can sit here and confidently say, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles are always at the top of that list, right? I mean, Jahan Campbell falls to him, Andrew McCoop. Yeah, so I mean, I'm looking at that and I'm like, wow, how does that happen? How did this rich get richer? And then the Shedeur Sanders, I mean, I'm sitting there just wondering, you know, how terrible do those interviews have to be behind the scenes, or what has to be going on that you can just continue to let him fall? And then we saw the Browns take him. So I just want them on Hard Knocks. Overall, though, I think this might have been the most I've watched a draft. I don't know if it's because my wife was working and the kids were just going off doing their thing, but I just kept it on TV and kept up with it pretty well. So it was a fun weekend. Glad we got our players and glad that we can look forward to this 2025 season that, I got to be honest, I'm feeling a little bit more optimistic than I probably should be after, you know, before the draft. Now I'm feeling way too optimistic and I need to take a step back.
After Mel Kiper and a few other analysts, a bunch of days of kicking and screaming about who failed and who thrived in the NFL draft, Kat, you said it perfectly. I'm kind of on board with saying everybody across the board gets a B- for now and let everything unfold the way it should be. But that's not why we're here, right? It is April 28th, and we are here to talk about some football. So I did a roundup of some draft grades on Sports Illustrated. I got 10 national media outlets. Two of them gave Miami a B+. The lowest grade they got was a C-. I think that was CBS Sports. And it was the lowest grade the CBS Sports analyst gave out. They gave out the Browns an incomplete. You can kind of guess why. So overall, the Miami Dolphins, 3 days after the draft, have come out with an overall draft grade, GPA, I should say, of 2.7, about an average of about a C+. Kat, how do you feel about just the general reaction of the national media towards what the Miami Dolphins did in this draft?
Yeah, I'm not too surprised at that. I mean, I think through a lot of people's eyes, the Dolphins came away in the first round with a two-down run defender, and in the second round, they traded up for a guard. I think that's how, I think generally a draft like that is perceived a little bit more harshly. And then they also, made some, they traded down and they got an extra third-round pick for next year, which they'll pair with their expected fourth round comp pick with Javon Holland. So right off the bat, you've got what, 9 picks next year. So yeah, but overall, I'm not shocked at the reaction they've gotten for the positions that they drafted. Drafting big defensive linemen usually isn't sexy in the media.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's not sexy, but I'm still like a little bit dumbfounded that it was the worst grade by CBS Sports. I think The Athletic, Dame Brugler, with the best, one of the best in the business, came out there. I think he had the Dolphins 31st out of the 32 teams. I mean, I feel like that's a little bit too harsh. Again, I'm a homer all the way, but I was a little bit surprised by it. But I do like that, Jake, you put together all these different grades and gave us a GPA, because, I mean, the GPA doesn't sound too bad. I mean, I think you guys know who you're talking to here. I'm okay with a C-plus in that aspect, but I think the Dolphins did better than the national media is giving credit for. But I agree with Katz, because they went up there, got those meat and potato picks, and it's not that quite the flashy, sexy cornerback or safety or whatever some of these guys were mocking them.
So we did a recap of Miami's first round selection, Kenneth Grant. We did that on Friday after he was drafted Thursday. But Kat, we've had a couple days to marinate on it. How are you feeling about Miami's selection at 13th overall?
Yeah, good. I mean, I'm operating under the assumption that the Dolphins did not have any or very few trade down opportunities. So we got to take it from there. At the time of the pick, there were clear cut top three players on my board: Will Johnson from Michigan, Jahdae Barron from Texas, and Kenneth Grant. Kenneth Grant, up to like a week before, I had him a little bit above Barron. And then I flip flopped him because a team needs, and after the Jalen Ramsey talks really heated up. But for what was there, I liked the pick. He's almost 6'4", 330 pounds. And I would have hated if the Dolphins came away with Walter Nolan or Derek Harmon here, even though they're good prospects. Grant, I think, could truly be special. Now, not only in terms of his size, but also tying up two blocks, but also being able to cut through those and get into the backfield. He needs some refinement, but overall, if you're going to go defensive line here after all this, you better be somebody big, better be somebody special. And I think they got that type of prospect.
Yeah, and I'm just going to echo what Kat says. You know, those prospects that were there, I definitely felt like, you know, they were best available. I also think Tyler Warren was still available, right? Didn't he go after the Dolphins? So he was that one again. Houts would have probably drafted him fantasy-wise. But when the Dolphins, I mean, they came into this, we saw their needs. I kind of feel like they almost felt like they almost had to go in this direction. You know, with the offensive guard we'll talk about, with the defensive line, I mean, I feel like they, you know, were up against the wall. And I feel like this was the best pick. I mean, Kenneth Grant just seems to fit with this, the defense needs. He's still young. Like Kat said, he still has so much potential. He can take on the double teams while also opening things up for everyone else. And then he can use his quickness to get inside. So intrigued, because as we'll talk about, they brought in some more meat on the defensive line. So intrigued to see if they plan on moving him around a little bit more, how he fits into things. But for once in my life, I'm happy that Stephen Ross got his guy. And again, this was the player that if I had to go defensive tackle here, I would have went with Kenneth Grant. So after a few days, after watching, I think like 6 or 7 games, I feel, I don't want to say I love the pick, because that's come back to be yolk on my face, but I very, very much like this pick.
Josh, what you said there about what you wanted and what the Dolphins did is the exact difference of why this offseason needed to be different for the Dolphins, right? Like, we've had the years of where you go and you get the flashy player, and you know, by December we're all sitting here saying, well, we wish the Dolphins had an extra guard, we wish they were better at defensive tackle. I was really focused on the NFL Network analysis. Daniel Jeremiah, I mean, this is a Dolphins podcast. Everyone else probably already knows this, but he is without a doubt the best in the business. I absolutely love listening to Jeremiah talk, because his perspective is more about the players than it is about himself. But two notes that I really love about Kenneth Grant: his defensive coordinator last year at Michigan, Wink Martindale, spent a lot of time in Baltimore with Anthony Weaver. I think there was one year he was the defensive coordinator, and that's when Weaver was like the run game coordinator. And then the other note, Daniel Jeremiah compared him to 5-time Pro Bowler Haloti Ngata, who was drafted by the Baltimore Ravens in 2006. Daniel Jeremiah was working for the Ravens in 2006. He was a West Coast scout. And where did Ngata come out of? Oregon. So he was out there scouting this guy. And that just kind of made me a little excited for the pick. Kat, how do you feel like this complements the Dolphins roster? Because you have a pretty flashy pass rush. You have the only defensive tackle in the entire NFL who has 10 sacks in back-to-back years. How does Grant mesh with this defensive line that we kind of felt that, especially at edge rusher, could be the strength of this defense next year?
Well, of course, on video, my light went out again, so I'm not going to mess with that. But yeah, to answer your question here, as far as comparing him to Haloti Ngata and Vita Vea, I've heard those comparisons. I think they were a little bit, believe it or not, wider type of players than Grant. I think Grant, is more, he's somebody who wanted to get, he wants to get into the backfield more than those two guys did. Now, but I understand the size comparison. You know, at 6'4", 330 pounds. Grant, I feel like he can play. I mean, at Michigan, he played three technique. He played nose tackle. So that's huge for this defense. And, but it, when you've already got a big linebacker core there with, you know, Bradley Chubb, Jalen Phillips, Jordan Brooks, you've got Zach Seeler on one side. Now you've got Kenneth Grant on the other side. I think it really takes the size of your front seven and ups it a couple notches. And they drafted two other big defensive linemen here toward the end of the draft too. So I think the size component's gotten better.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand some of the frustration. I mean, I don't know if it's our fan base, you know, just the national media. I mean, I can understand when people are like, okay, you had Christian Wilkins, you let him go. You know, you had that void there, you had to fill it. But, I mean, I feel like almost that this could be, I don't want to say a better version of what we had with him and Steeler, but I just feel like what Kenneth Grant brings to the table, and again, maybe it's because at the time I liked Wilkins one way, and now, you know, the prospect of Kenneth Grant, I feel like he might just be, you know, tweaked up a little bit more, but I feel like adding him to that defensive line next to Steeler is going to create so many mismatches up front. And then again, that edge rushing unit. I mean, if you can just get one, you know, two guys on Kenneth Grant, as, you know, we'll see all throughout his film, it just opens something else for everyone else, and that's just a nasty business, especially if the edge unit can stay healthy. So again, we came into this offseason feeling kind of down, I don't know, sort of speak, about all these holes, but I feel like, you know, the first few rounds they hit home runs, and I'm excited to see what Kenneth Grant can to mean to this defense, because they all sounded like they wanted him, this was their guy, and they got him. So it's time for him to be that player.
There is a lot to digest about Miami's second round selection. So guys, let's start with the trade here. So the Dolphins worked out a deal with the Raiders, and it's interesting because the Dolphins just hired their assistant GM. You wonder what kind of communications were happening there. But the Dolphins acquired pick 37 and a fifth round pick, 143 overall, who they used to select Jordan Phillips. More on that in a little bit. For the Dolphins second, the 48th, so they jumped up nine spots. They invested their third round pick, pick 98, a compensatory pick, and one of their two fourth round picks in order to move up. And I apologize already, we're going to spend a lot of months learning how to pronounce his name. Jonah Sivanea from Arizona. I'm pretty sure I butchered that. But Kat, before we talk about the player, what'd you think of that trade?
Didn't like the trade. And I wanted the Dolphins in this draft to trade down until it hurt. And it looked like in the second round, they had a few more opportunities to do that. If Sivanea was the last guard available there and then there was a monumental drop-off, I would have understood it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But if you lost him and you ended up with Tate Ratledge 11 picks later, or even trade down, which you could have done and gotten a Tate Ratledge, or a Jalen Rivers or a Miles Frazier, I didn't see a huge difference in those guys. Now, I like Sivanea the most out of that group, but barely. And I think in this type of draft where you have so many needs to fill, that I would have preferred to trade down instead of trade up. So, you know, it's not, you're talking about extra third and fourth rounders swapping for a fifth rounder. It's not the end of the world, but yeah, I definitely cringed when I heard the Dolphins had traded up and not down.
Yeah, and that just has to be for an offensive lineman, right? I mean, we all like Sivanea, but it has to be for an offensive lineman who's going to play guard. I mean, it feels like, you know, deja vu all over again, but maybe this is part of the reason why I don't want to bring up Eichenberg's name. He's like the boogeyman. He's going to just pop out like but I mean, maybe this is why the Dolphins are getting some of those harsh grades, right? They had how many picks coming into this? And they did. You know, they used them, you know, for better or worse, we'll find out, but they used them to move around the board. And, you know, that's a good point by Kat, that there were some very good players after the fact that they probably could have just sat back and wait. I do like the fact though that they saw him and felt, okay, this is our guy. We like him this much. We talked to him at the, you know, throughout the draft process. He loves, you know, blocking for Polynesian players. I think he says only blocked for Polynesian quarterbacks. So glove fit here in Miami. I think he even has some familiarity with Tua, but that was your guy. You went up there and got him. I'm hoping it works out because we like this player. I think we talked about him pre-draft a couple times. We like the player, but I can agree with Kat that it was a little bit too rich of my blood. And I mean, you're sitting there seeing it. You're like, come on, man, you couldn't just wait and let him come to you, like typical Dolphins. But again, there's probably teams behind them that we'll find out later down the road that had significant interest. And that's why they did it.
Kudos pick to you. 38. Sorry, go ahead, Kat.
Kudos to you, Josh. In our, I think our episode of who we think the Dolphins are going to draft, you picked Kenneth Grant and Jonah Sivanea. Nailed both right on the head. And a thing about him too is he played left tackle and right tackle at Arizona, and he played in very throw heavy environments too. So now you take him, and it's Senior Bowl week. He was a little bit exposed, but I think that turned out to be for the better for him, because he still almost became a first rounder by being able to move inside to guard. And I think he caught a lot more people's attention by being viewed as a guard prospect as opposed to a slow-footed offensive tackle. So that certainly helped him.
Greg Bedard, who covers the New England Patriots, who are picking pick 38th. I guess there was a heated debate in their war room about taking Savanaya at 38, Josh. So, I mean, you're on fire, dude. You are on fire. And that doesn't necessarily justify the pick. What I thought was kind of interesting, and it was actually kind of cool for me. So I had the NFL Network going, and then I also had NFL.com was doing, it was Bucky Brooks and Lance Zierlein was in a different studio talking about it. Zierlein kind of did a sigh of relief that the Dolphins didn't get Tate Ratledge. He thought Savanaya was a little bit better of a scheme fit here, which I thought was interesting at 6'5", 330 pounds. I think that what the Dolphins might have really liked here is like that break in case of emergency, that experience at tackle. He started 5 games at left tackle, 16 games at right tackle. Jackson Carmine, not going to be starting at tackle at any point throughout this year. I think that's the key. Kat, you did compare him to Robert Hunt a little bit, which I thought was interesting. I'd like to hear your thoughts on how you see this line shaking up between these 5 guys that the Dolphins have, because they have 5 solidified starters, but I think Mike McDaniel doing what he does, he danced around kind of labeling a left guard and a right guard so far.
Yeah, and I'll dance around that too. if I had to guess, I'd say 7A plays right guard and Daniels plays left. And if you can get a Robert Hunt type of immediate investment, a return on investment with him, I mean, you're talking about now your interior being Daniels, if he can stay healthy, Brewer and 7A. So now I think we can see a pathway for this offensive line, especially the interior being pretty good. Now you still have Patrick Paul and Austin Jackson, who are constant question marks, but at least I see a pathway for 5 talented players to be on the field.
Yeah, and you talked about it a little bit, Kat. I went back, you know, I don't know if he played guard at all this season. I think it was mostly tackle. But, you know, you see him at tackle, and it seems like it's a world of a difference between those two positions. So I'd rather not see him use that versatility. But having that, you know, the Dolphins absolutely were licking their chops at that. And, you know, we try to defer it because we don't really know. I think James Daniels even said it doesn't matter one way or the other. But, again, Patrick Paul coming in here, this is his, you know, first go-ahead as the starter, the big guy. This is you're now the franchise left tackle. I'd rather have James Daniels next to him. But having Savanaya, a guy that, you know, has experience there, you know, was a little bit exposed, like Kat said, at the Senior Bowl. But I think he's a great player. And I like the Dolphins, that they went up there and got him. But can understand why some fans are upset, right? We got a Christian Wilkins replacement. We got a Robert Hunt replacement. Why don't you just sign your own Chris Greer? But, you know, that's a lot more about money and things like that. And these players might even have more of a ceiling, if we're being honest.
The trades had so much to do with the Dolphins draft grade. And the Dolphins weren't done trading because they were getting close to being on the board in the 4th round, and they traded with the Houston Texans. So the Texans sent the Miami Dolphins pick 179, which was used on Ollie Gordon, and a 2026 third rounder for Miami's 116th and 224. This doesn't mean anything, but Kat, before I throw it to you, I just want to add that the Texans selected Woody Marks, 116th, and then Keontae Hamilton, 224th. I know that context isn't super important there, but just to get an idea of who was available on the board if the Dolphins kept those picks.
Yeah, if they had a couple of guys that were on the board. Wait, we're talking about here the trade that they made
with Houston.
With Houston. They were picking what? Where at the time?
They were originally 116.
116. I think Miles Frazier went in the, and Jalen Rivers were 2 players that were still on the board. I would like for them to double dip and gotten those players. But this is one trade I did like when they moved down, because they moved down and they ended up in the 5th round taking Jordan Phillips. Jordan Phillips is somebody I thought easily could have gone in the 4th round. And now you also get a future 3rd round pick next year. I mean, it's not exciting this year, but you combine that with, you know, Javon Holland, where you're probably getting a 4th round compensatory pick from him, and now you've got 4 picks in the first 8 rounds. We're off to a good start there. I think that, you know, but what I want to see Chris Greer do and commit to on a long-term basis is keeping those picks and not viewing those picks as ammunition to combine to move up a couple of spots, like they did here, like they did in 2021 when Liam Eikenberg was on the board. And if they had just picked the best offensive lineman, they would have come away with Sam Cosmi or Creed Humphrey in that draft.
That's true.
So you got to ask, Sevenia, is that a guy you absolutely life or death needed to have? He fills a need. He was a good pick, but maybe the answer to that is no.
I didn't mind it. I mean, I'm sitting there, and again, maybe I'm a sicko, but I was watching Sanders fall, and I'm thinking, okay, we heard the pre-draft stuff. The Dolphins want a quarterback. I'm thinking, are they going to, you know, do the unthinkable and make this happen? But then when they trade out, I'm thinking, okay, very nice. You get a third round next year, but my first reaction, and Jake, you have written here, is Greer safe. And I'm just thinking, the way he talked in his pre-draft thing, you're now hearing this. I mean, I don't know. Maybe my it was a little bit premature myself sitting here saying that this might be the end of McDaniel and Chris Greer, because it sounds like Chris Greer is going to be that cockroach at the end of this thing. So I'm okay that they acquired new picks, intrigued to see how they let the board unfold, because let's be honest, like Kat said, Jordan Phillips is a player who they probably could have got mock draft wise. It looked like he could have been gone a lot higher and some of these other guys. So I like the way it ended up falling for the Miami Dolphins. But at the time, I'm just thinking, come on, man, please tell me Chris Greer is not safe.
So I like that you guys both instantly went to next year at these picks. I was sitting there at work this morning getting the hamster wheel going as I drank my coffee. The draft capital the Dolphins were projected to get in a Jalen Ramsey trade, where it was next year. Nobody was talking about Jalen Ramsey giving you draft capital for this year. We're thinking that Chris Greer has a draft pick for next year. We're thinking the Dolphins don't have a starting cornerback. That's like the biggest need. Who's to say that third round pick isn't getting shipped out in 2 months for a starting cornerback when training camp begins? That's what I think is going to happen. I shot my shot before the draft saying that Miami was going to trade up. I think that this pick might not make it to the regular season. I think this might be Chris Greer's final piece when you say, all right, cornerback, you want someone a little more experienced back there, at least for a starter. Jaire Alexander, I wouldn't be a huge fan of that. But guys, what would your thoughts be on if this third round pick is kind of saving it for a couple months from now, the idea of like, hey, we can still trade this third for maybe someone who's a little disgruntled and get a starter at least for the 2025 season?
Yeah, I would prefer that the Dolphins take a look at someone like Rasul Douglas out there, who I think fits the scheme well and doesn't cost you a draft pick. I mean, I think the Dolphins have been burned way too many times by taking these mid-round picks and getting greedy with them. I mean, there are a lot of there was a time that if the Dolphins had not traded for Jalen Wright last year, you know, we could have been talking about having the 79th pick, the 98th pick.
And, owning the third round.
You know, so many in the middle rounds. And now instead you come away with just what, three picks inside of the top 154, you know? So sometimes I think they might just be getting too creative with them, but I am glad that they came away with a third rounder next year. I just hope they don't light it on fire for whatever.
I think they might.
Yeah, it's possible, but I sure hope they don't.
Yeah, I think you talked me out of Alexander a few weeks ago, Jake, when I just threw his name out there. Like, we don't need that head case. But, I mean, they might have something up their sleeve. And, you know, to your point, maybe they couple that third with Ramsey to a team and get a higher draft, you know, whatever it might be. But I'd much rather them just, you know, keep the picks they have and just let – if it's Chris Greer next year, we'll deal with that. If it's the next regime, let them have that extra third, because it's tiring to see them continue to use them. And, you know, again, we came in this with 10 picks, and they came with how many players? So – be a nice pick at the time, but would have much rather them have, done other things.
10 years after drafting Jordan Phillips, the Miami Dolphins drafted Jordan Phillips. When asked about the older Jordan Phillips, the Jordan Phillips out of Maryland, I promise that's the last time I'm going to acknowledge both of them, but I've been studying his career since really he was at Oklahoma. I watched him when he got drafted by Miami and played for them, and I even followed his career when he signed with the Cardinals and even now that he's with the Bills. So I've studied him a lot. Kat, I think this was a name we all talked about a little bit on our mock drafts, but what are your thoughts on the Dolphins being able to lock up Jordan Phillips at 143 overall?
Yeah, I like it a lot, and this is someone a few of us had on our what we would do mock drafts or what the Dolphins will do. But yeah, I mean, this is somebody, he's very what you see is what you get. He had zero career college sacks. I don't think so. If you got to think, Dane Brugler's got him as a third rounder. PFF has him as a third rounder heading into this draft. He never had a sack in college, offers pretty much nothing against the pass. He's a pretty good run defender. He's stout. He's 6'2", 213 pounds, hard to move, plays with a great base and a lot of leverage. I would not be surprised if he's starting over Benito Jones sooner rather than later. And he's barely 21 years old. So I think he's, other than if this guy were able to rush the passer almost as well as he defends the run, we'd be talking about a first or a second round draft pick here. So to get somebody like that in the middle of the fifth round, I was very pleased.
I think he'll be better than the other Jordan Phillips, right? Like, I feel like he's probably has a chance to be better than the last Jordan Phillips we drafted. I mean, if Kenneth Grant's our Snorlax on roller skates with Rockets, I think this is kind of just our Snorlax. He's the guy that's just going to be a body in the middle, take up the blocks, and open things up for everyone else. I love that Cap brought up his age because I looked it up and I was like, this dude's 20? Like, how much potential does he still have? And I think in his interview process, he's like, I'm a grown-ass man. I handle myself like a grown man. So this isn't going to be any issue for me. So I like this pick. Again, it was a name that I think both of you probably had in your mock drafts. And it's a player who was, you know, many of the draft pundits had going higher. So good for the Dolphins to let him kind of fall in their lap and intrigued what this brings to their rotation, right? Because we came into this knowing that they need to bring in so many bodies at defensive tackle. You bring in a 20-year-old, you bring in a 21-year-old. I mean, if they can develop and things like that and take on the playbook and, you know, earn that role in this defense, that could be, you know, a unit that's looking pretty okay or very nice with Sealer as well and some of those other guys for years to come.
I look at the two Jordan Phillips as like the inverse of each other. Guys, step on me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like this one is more of the higher motor, the competitor, where the other Jordan Phillips that I think the Dolphins drafted in the second round had all the tools, and the issue was his motor. You're just wondering if he was going to be competing every single down. Speaking about the fifth round picks, one thing I look for is experience. You want guys who can just come in and be comfortable. The game isn't too much for them because you're not leaning into traits. So, Cap, Jason Marshall Jr. out of Florida. He started 7 games in each of the last 4 seasons at Florida. What does he bring to the Dolphins? Are we talking a backup here with maybe some upside and special teams, things like that? Or do you think he could probably push for a starting job year one as a fifth rounder?
Yeah, these next two picks, Dolphins started to lose me a little bit. I thought there were a lot of good players at cornerback and safety, and I was not crazy about these two selections. Now, Jason Marshall Jr. does have potential. I mean, you're talking about somebody in 2021. He was the number 2 cornerback recruit coming out of high school. So he was a 5-star recruit. Obviously, the guy has potential, but he never put it together at Florida. He hasn't had an interception since the end of the 2022 season. So he makes plays on the ball, but he certainly isn't creating a lot of turnovers there at Florida, even though he had the chance to do that. He missed the last 6 games of last year with a shoulder injury. So I really hope this isn't a situation too where, you know, you're wondering if he's going to be ready here for mini camp and training camp. So, he's somebody that has potential, but it just hasn't quite put it all together yet. So we'll see where that goes. I would have preferred the Dolphins had gone somewhere else. Maybe Denzel Burke from Ohio State, who's not flashy, but it gets the job done a little bit more, or at least did at Ohio State more than Marshall did at Florida.
Yeah, and I laugh, but this is what I love so much about mock draft simulators. Kenneth Grant was mocked to the second round. I think in one of my mock drafts, I got Jason Marshall in the 7th. So it's just so funny, you know, where they go and how you can all draft process have them late in the round. But when I did that, I broke down what he was. And to me, he seems like he's a boundary quarterback. But like you said, he's so raw that, I just need to see him develop into something more than that. Needs to get better in run support. Has that 4.3 speed that he showed at his 40 day. But again, this is a guy who hasn't really shown much in college, and he had that injury last season. So special teams player, right? But this doesn't make me feel any better about the cornerback room, though I understand why they felt like they needed to get one. And I do believe in his presser, did he say he's been studying Jalen Ramsey like his whole career? So maybe that's something there, but I don't know.
5 picks later, Kat, why didn't you like Maryland's Dante Trader Jr.?
4.65, 40 speed, 9'9" broad jump, and 31-inch vertical leap. I mean, those are eye-poppingly bad numbers. Now he's going to play in a zone defense, and he's more of a box safety. I also think too, like he sounds like a less physically impressive version of a Patrick McMorris. I have severe concerns whether or not he's even going to make the team as we sit here today. Now, This is also somebody that, you know, according to all the reports I've read, I don't know personally, that they rave about his work ethic and character. So maybe he overcomes those odds because of who he is as a football player and a person. But man, I look at players on the board like, could you have doubled down a cornerback with a Denzel Burke or a Dorian Strong? Just players I was way more impressed with at defensive back. Even a Jalen Reed, the safety who went in the 180s out of Penn State, I liked a whole lot more. So in this defense, it could work, but 5'11", 196, 4'6", 5'40", 9'9", broad jump, 31-inch vert. It's hard for me to wrap my head around that.
I think I even skeeted out that Jalen Reed was the guy I wanted in that position. But when I went and looked at the tape, I mean, I'll be honest, I wasn't very familiar with Trader Jr., but he did stand out a little bit. You know, he's playing all over the field. He's making tackles, you know, wrapping players up, like unlike anything we saw Javon Holland do last season. So I was, cautiously optimistic from what I saw, but this guy isn't someone that I'm, again, just like Jason Marshall, does not make me feel any better about the secondary. He can do some versatile things. I think he said he molds his game after Buda Baker. So if we can get a poor man's Buda Baker out of him, I won't be too upset. But he sounds like a guy just likes to inflict damage on those guys out there on the field. So I will sit back, relax, and let's see what he can become. But I don't know that this makes me feel any better about him. Iffy, McMorris, Ashton Davis. I mean, that secondary is going after allowing those big guys up front. And I mean, that's kind of the vision, right? To let those big guys go up there and eat the quarterback before he can get the ball off.
I just hope he's not going to inflict damage on his own team like Jordan Poyer did. That, I think, is like the first step in the right direction here. Cap, last year, if Ollie Gordon II was in the draft, I think he might have gone like three rounds higher, if not more. What do you make of this pick in the sixth round, and where does he sit on the Dolphins depth chart?
Yeah, it's funny. About a week after the draft, we have a family vacation. My project is to sit on the beach and take all the 2026 mock drafts and just see who the top guys are. I think in the top 50, you had Quinn Ewers and you had Ollie Gordon. I think they were both in the top 30, actually. So getting him in the sixth and seventh round a year later is fascinating. Now, Gordon did not have a great year. I mean, he averaged 4.3 yards a carry. I think before it was 6.1. And I mean, my NFL comparison for him is a caveman. He gets the ball and he's straight north south runner, extremely powerful when he gets rumbling downhill. So that component was needed. So I did like this pick. I thought it was good value in the sixth round. In Lance Zierlein's scouting report, one of the NFC scouts remarked to him, very simply, "What'd you think about Ollie Gordon's season?" And he said he had. At Oklahoma State, they had bad quarterback play, a subpar offensive line, and every defense was keyed on Ollie Gordon. Watch his 2023 tape and skip his 2024 tape. And that does kind of sum things up. Also, good pass protector, and for his size, he has good hands too. So I like the pick.
Yeah, you're right, Jake. He would have been him and Ubers, right? So we'll talk about those are two guys that were very highly regarded heading into this thing. And to think that the Dolphins could get him here, that's kind of why I was okay with trading out. You know, Phillips, Trader Jr., you got Ollie Gordon here, you get your quarterback. I mean, you can see the vision. And I know we love to say it, but this got to be the Thunder, right, Jake? This is our Thunder. I think
finally.
It was Doug Farrar. I probably messed that
Armament
up. That sounds good. 1,056 yards would be a pretty decent season for NCAA running backs, but that's how many yards he had after contact in 2023. So we finally got our Thunder. We got our little modern-day Larry Zonka, and like Kat said, he can pass protect. I mean, there's a highlight reel going around where he's just obliterating dudes, and that's an aspect that the Dolphins could absolutely use. And then you wonder, you add him with Jalen Wright, you move Devon Achane around more, you have Alexander Mattison. So, you know, that dude started at one point in the NFL, right? So there's some backs now, and want to see the way the chips fall, but I was kind of surprised Ollie Gordon was still there, and to be completely honest.
JGIA was not selected. He was selected pretty close to him.
That's right.
And I think Ajayi was a late fifth, and Gordon's an early sixth. So I'm not saying he'll have that career, but Ajayi had a lot of strikes.
Trade him to Philly before his legs fall off. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. We knew about Ajayi's knee. And that's why he had such a short career. But Gordon, as far as his running style and what he brings, is pretty similar.
So the schedule, they had an announcement for the schedule release, an announcement for the announcement. But May 14th, the NFL will release the full 2025 schedule. Kat, just to set expectations here, let's jump to week 5 The Dolphins are preparing to face the Jets. They sit there at 2-2. You got Tavon Achane as your lead back. Who's number two on the depth chart?
I'll say Jalen Wright still.
There.
I'll say Ollie Gordon because he said Jalen Wright. I'm trying to be different.
Does he have that type of potential, you think, though, to leapfrog Jalen Wright? Somebody who he had the game against the Colts where he was the featured back, and I think he played very well. But outside of that, it felt like he struggled to get comfortable. He was hitting the backfield quite a bit, which I know has to do with the Miami Dolphins offensive line. But considering how the potential of Gordon, especially when you're going back 2 years ago, is it being a homer to say that he has a shot to leapfrog someone like Jalen Wright, or would you set him as like the third back for now?
No, I think he's got potential to do it. I mean, and also, too, if he is a good pass protector, that means when you do that, you can get on the field a lot more quickly. That's usually the thing that rookies struggle with the most. So, you know, he has to prove it, but still, I think he has that type of potential. So, no, it wouldn't shock me, especially when you see the different styles of the two of the three top running backs. It wouldn't surprise me if Gordon is like, okay, let's get out there and get a hammer in there in the fourth quarter.
I was just going to say, that was something I liked about Jalen Wright, the pass protection last offseason. We didn't really see it come to fruition. So, yeah, I could see him leapfrogging in just that aspect alone. But all it takes is him converting a couple of short yard situations that we haven't seen in, 10 years. And now he becomes your RB2 for sure.
It's pretty impressive. So we each did two total mock drafts for this podcast. And the amount of names we've brought up that were drafted by the Dolphins, I think we did a pretty decent job. Thanks for some interesting podcasts. But 7th round, Quinn Ewers out of Texas. Cat, did that make your eyebrows pop up to see that go across the screen?
No, it was interesting. And you had him, I think, going in the 4th round in the mock draft that you had either for yourself or for the Dolphins a few weeks ago. No, I thought, it's interesting because I've never been Ewers' biggest fan, but it was always within the context of him being like a 3rd-round quarterback. Now, when you get down into the 7th round, pick 231, I'm all for it. I mean, I think that's he gets the ball out of his hands quickly. He's a really good handler of the ball too. He looks natural playing the position, and his career, I think he was with 27-9, and he had to drown out a lot of the Arch Griffin talk too. He's mobile. He moves around the pocket well. I see him as more of kind of a supercharged Skylar Thompson, so it's not a surprise they were interested in him. The comparison I have for him is Drew Lock, which if you're getting at the end of the 7th round really isn't too bad. I think he tends to fling the ball a little bit more than drive it. That's what kind of has always bothered me about him. But if you can correct a little bit of that style, I think you've got at least a good practice squad arm. We'll see a lot of him in the preseason.
You brought that up, Jake, and I think it was on a DM about how it's going to be so fun seeing Zach Wilson versus Quinn Ewers in preseason. I can't wait for that. I mean, I do have a Dory brain, but I can't overlook the fact that this guy, like Kat mentioned, was like a top 30 player, like one of the most, I think, highest rated prospect when he came out of high school. I mean, this guy has gone through a lot. You know, he started Ohio State, transferred to Texas, heard the Arch Manning things in his ear, has overcome some of that and, you know, won some big games for Texas. So getting him in the 7th round, I thought like this was an absolute home run. Could see why they didn't go after Sanders, because we heard about the dinner that he had with the Dolphins brass. And I think they talked about how last year at Texas Pro Day, he talked to Mike McDaniels and became, you know, had a relationship with him. So I'm intrigued by this. I want to see that battle for quarterback too. I like some of the traits that I can see that yours has. You know, he doesn't have the accuracy as Tua, but you can see some of those traits and how it might work in this offense. So good for the Dolphins for getting a guy who I think can be a very good QB3, you know, that worst case scenario. But again, could push Zach Wilson for QB2. And, you know, that means to us Dolphin fans, he's probably starting at least one game. And that's, you know, in Quinn Ewers, we trust, right?
Greer said that the Dolphins got a good report from Texas head coach Steve Sarkisian and likes his competitiveness and toughness. Excuse me. Mike McDaniel said playing an offensive scheme to what the Dolphins run will benefit him early in his NFL career. Zach Wilson was a third string quarterback last year. Yes, the Dolphins gave him a contract that can reach up to $10 million. He's on a 1-year deal. I think there's a legitimate chance where if there's a disaster scenario and the Dolphins are sitting there at like 2-6, you're not putting Wilson out there. If you're McDaniel and you're fighting for your job, you're showing like, hey, we got this Quinn Ewers guy and I can make it work with him too. I could see McDaniel kind of scheming some things up while Ewers kind of adjusts for the level where he can say like, hey, this is what you're going to be doing. I think that could work pretty well. Kett, do you think there's any chance here there could be a, you know, training camp, a preseason battle where Ewers could potentially come out on top, I should say, when you consider the fact like last season, Wilson was a third stringer too. And I think people are forgetting that about his time from the Jets to the Broncos and now the Dolphins.
Well, the Dolphins forgot he was a third stringer last year. I think it's the same Teddy Bridgewater versus Skylar Thompson conversation where
I like that.
It doesn't matter how well the guy plays in preseason. You paid one guy $6 million with a chance to make 10, and you paid the other guy practically nothing. So Wilson's going to get the benefit of the doubt, but it doesn't go back to if Wilson starts and does well, he's gone. If he doesn't play at all, he's gone after a year. So really, what's the point of any of this? So I like bringing Ewers in to the building, and especially as he went almost undrafted. And there are a few undrafted guys that I think that are non-quarterbacks that might have a shot too.
I think it could happen because, I mean, they're coming into this race kind of even, right? I mean, we know Zach Wilson has the NFL experience, but they're getting the playbook at different times, but, at, you know, similar around the same time. So let's let the battle commence and see what comes of it. And, you know, maybe this becomes our Brock Purdy or something like that. I mean, we see every NFL team hitting on some of these late guys. I mean, obviously, let's just let him become a backup for now. But, again, the promise was there at one point. I don't know if you guys saw Dez Bryant. He's going off saying this is Dan Marino 2.0 because of his quick release, saying he's already better than Tua Tagovailoa. I wouldn't go that far, but there is some there to Orr's game. And, I mean, you got to kind of respect him, right? He could have probably transferred, got paid even more in college to stick around, decided to come out this year. Just saw, I mean, I don't know where he was projected to go based on, you know, his camps telling him, but I mean, he plummeted to the seventh round. I mean, he came out knowing that that was a chance. Now he's in an offense that fits his skill set. Let's let Mike McDaniel, you know, work up the same type of magic he did with Tua that we were, you know, so hyped about several years ago. But I would also like to see Zach Wilson prove that he's something and, you know, fend him off. So, Jake, cat tip to you because that's probably one of the most exciting things about the preseason.
If we were doing a draft based on names alone, this dude would be a first rounder. Cat, tell me about Zeke Biggers out of Georgia Tech.
6'6", 352 pounds, barely 21 years old, massive and very, very raw. I mean, I don't see what else you'd want out of a seventh round pick. And I said before this draft that I think the Dolphins need to come away with three defensive linemen. Kenneth, they need a starter, which I think they got in Kenneth Grant, a rotational player, which I think they'll get in Jordan Phillips, rotating with Benito Jones, and then someone who has a chance to get on the field, and that's Zeke Biggers. So I think in that, they checkmark those boxes.
Yeah, and I don't know which one of you, but one of you I think had him maybe in one of your mock drafts or brought him up as, you know, a defensive tackle that maybe would, be later in the draft to target. So I like you mentioned, the revamped defensive line unit. I think they hit on all aspects. Again, Kenneth Grant was the guy I had, you know, my eyes had a little heart emoji in for. Jordan Phillips was the guy you guys kind of talked me into. You can see the raw potential there. Then this guy hit Biggers. I mean, he's bigger. He's just that big body that's going to be in the middle. And all these guys, I mean, maybe I'm as crazy on the draft, but it seems like they drafted kind of younger guys with some potential that, you know, still have room to grow, but also have shown that they can contribute, you know, right away. Like we're going to need them to.
Building the culture, starting in the trenches. Kat, we're running out of time here, but I want to get your thoughts here. The Dolphins are going through all the undrafted free agents. We'll break down a list on a future pod, maybe take a closer look at the guaranteed money to see who Miami likes more. But based on some of the guys the Dolphins have been linked to already, are there a couple names you're excited about?
Yeah, I'll just throw five out there. Just give you a one-liner. Andrew Armstrong from Arkansas. I was my consensus list. I think there was like 15 players not drafted. One of them, I think seventh, was Andrew Armstrong from Arkansas. 1,140 yards last year at 6'4", 204 pounds, and ran a 4.49. That's pretty impressive on paper. Theo Weiss from Mizzou, I've seen a lot of here, went undrafted. Not surprised, he didn't have the physical skills, but a crafty route runner and had more receiving yards than Luther Burden last year. So someone to keep your eye on. Jalen Conyers, I was stunned, did not get drafted. If he had run a 4.640 instead of a 4.74, I think he'd be a fourth round pick instead of undrafted. Mm-hmm. But Texas Tech, crafty, hard to cover tight end. Janu Smith, I won't compare him to him, but he's got a little bit of that style. Defensively, Eugene Asante from Auburn. Very few linebackers, even at 220, run a 4.47. So I thought he'd get drafted based on that too. BJ Adams, the cornerback from UCF. skinny, but ran a 4.46 at nearly 6 foot two. I actually liked him more than the fifth round pick, Jason Marshall. So I thought he was, the Dolphins have had a knack with Kader Kohou and Nick Needham and Storm Duck with these undrafted rookie free agents. I hope BJ Adams is that next guy.
Yeah, I mean, Kat nailed it. I was going to say BJ Adams as that cornerback because we need a cornerback. And then Conyers kind of, I see he played a little bit of Wildcat, can do a little bit of things. So, you know, we all wanted the Tyler Warren Swiss Army knife. He's probably not going to do the same things in the blocking scheme of things like we expected. But to have another tight end there that can make plays, interested to see how it works out. But I haven't dived too much into these guys because every year I get so hyped for them. And then, well, you know how that goes.
I think we lost Kat. I think his time ran out with us, but shout out Kat. I mean, this has been an absolute awesome pod. Josh, thank you too. You guys educated me so much about this. That is it. That is all the time we have today on another Dolphins podcast. Our schedule is a little unique in the off season, so to make sure you know when a new podcast hits, make sure you are subscribed. iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us there. Shout out Podbean. And also, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can email us at anotherdolphinspodcast@gmail.com. Josh, I got a couple emails in my back pocket, so we'll have to do a mailbag soon. Shout out everyone who's been sending those in. And also, if you want to hang out with our beautiful faces, 560 WQAM on YouTube. You can find all our shows there. I think someone donated us $5 a couple weeks ago. Shout out them. That is absolutely awesome. You know, we do this for you guys, so definitely don't need your money, but we thank you so much for engaging and being part of our show. Josh, you got any final words for us?
No, don't be too high on this draft. Don't be too low on this draft. And like Jake said, please smash that little bell. Come along with our ride for the Miami Dolphins and whoever gave us that money. I mean, that's awesome. We don't need it, but it's amazing to know that you guys are enjoying the pod. So again, don't be too high. Don't be too low. But 2025 season is going to be here pretty quickly.
For another Dolphins podcast, we hope you guys have a great beginning of the week. And until next time, fins up.
Fins up.